laws, respect the things that we have made so valuable to us that we have protected them by law. So the rights of people not to be stoned for being gay, the rights of women to make choices in their own lives, like whether they want to work and how many children they want to have and whether they want to marry and whether they want to be educated, all of that kind of stuff. It's respecting the law. Thank you, Susan. Susan from Exeter.
On your radio, on Global Player, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 3 o'clock, British nationals are again being told to get out of Lebanon while commercial airlines are still flying in and out of the country. It's as fears grow that Israel's about to launch a ground invasion against Hezbollah. Officials in Lebanon say more than 1,000 people have been killed in the past 2 weeks, while up to 1 million people may now be displaced. Ahmed Bayram is the Middle East media advisor at the Norwegian Refugee Council. He told LBC the outlook doesn't look good.
Now things will, of course, deteriorate with, for example, healthcare system being squeezed even further, medication running out fast. And of course, despite the reassurances that we get from there, we do expect, you know, the economic aspect to be, to be crippled.
Four police officers and a staff member are to face disciplinary proceedings over the David Carrick case. The watchdog's been looking into how the Metropolitan Police dealt with four allegations against a serial rapist while he was a serving officer. He was eventually arrested in October 2021 and jailed last February. Tory leadership hopeful Tom Tugendhat has apologised for the infighting between Conservative MPs and the drubbing at the general election. He's been taking part in a Q&A at the Conservative Party conference in Birmingham.
Thousands of activists, hundreds of candidates put their absolute all into a campaign and were let down by others. It wasn't this party that failed. It wasn't the ideas that failed. It was the centre that failed. And we need to own that. And so from my perspective, let me just say to all of you, I'm sorry.
Unite has branded the thousands of job losses, one of the biggest steelworks in the world, industrial vandalism. After more than 100 years, the last furnace at Tata Steel in Port Talbot shuts this evening. It's being replaced with an electric version, but that won't be up and running until 2028. Wales Office Minister Nia Griffiths says they're doing what they can to soften the blow.
We're also putting in help for the supply chain workers because their companies can no longer sell to Tata, for them to get retraining and for those companies to look for new markets. So we are trying to make sure that all those people who are affected are getting some support.
In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading down 50 points at 82.70. The pound buys $1.33 and €1.19. LBC weather staying wet and windy for much of England and Wales this afternoon. The heaviest rain in the north of the country. Brighter elsewhere, highs of 17 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Jenny Barsby.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Sheila Fogarty.
Hello there, good afternoon to you. I want to talk about something very specific this hour, which is your child's or children's hearing. And the reason for that is that Sean Linton, health editor at the Sunday Times, will join us in just a second. He broke a story over the weekend that I must admit, when I was reading it, my jaw dropped. It's something that the health secretary himself only became aware of in the middle of last week, which Sean will elaborate on in just a moment. But it was about the misdiagnosis of many, many children when it came to their hearing issues. Some were tested and sent home, told everything is normal. And it wasn't. And for want of a simple hearing aid in many cases, they then went on to develop difficulties, developmental difficulties followed because they weren't able to hear what they needed to hear in order to develop properly and to thrive in their education, whatever setting that was in. So I want to know if you have had any experience of this, of getting a listening diagnosis, auditory diagnosis for your child, and what happened, what flowed from that? What were your first concerns about your child's hearing, and how difficult or not was it to get help, and most importantly, the right diagnosis and the right help. 0345 6060 973. It's possible that some of you listening have been caught up in this very crisis that Sean has been writing about. If that's the case, do give us a call. 0345 6060 973, and you can text 84850. Sean joins me now. Hi, Sean. Thanks for coming on the programme.
My pleasure, Sheila. Thanks for having me.
Do you want to just take us back to the beginning here of what's emerged?
Yeah, so what we broke over the weekend was a story affecting hundreds of children across England. And at its heart, what this is a systemic failure of NHS paediatric audiology services. So these are the services that families will be referred to when their child has a suspected hearing problem and they want to kind of either get that investigated, get it confirmed, maybe they need hearing aids, something like that. And what we've uncovered is that effectively those services all across the country have been failing. So there are concerns at 90 units out of roughly 140 doing these services across the country.
And when you say the country, do you mean England and Wales or the
England,
UK? England.
England. So this relates to England, but we do know that there was a problem in Scotland as well, and there was an inquiry into the Lothian area that was published last year that triggered the work in England that helped to uncover what we've been writing about. So, you know, this is a broad problem, and the documents that we've seen that were labelled rather amusingly confidential, restricted, and, you know, basically don't share these with anybody, actually reveal that there are 1,540 children suspected of having been misdiagnosed by the NHS. So, and what we mean by that is these are children who may have been told, or their parents may have been told, they don't have a hearing problem when actually they do. And that can have really serious consequences for these children. They can struggle to develop their speech, they can struggle at school, they can be isolated, they can be socially curtailed. This can have long-term effects. And what experts have told me is that the longer it takes to actually diagnose the problem and fix it with, say, hearing aids, if that's possible, the more permanent this becomes, because it's all about the exposure to sound in the brain and the nerves firing. And the longer you leave it without help, the worse it gets. And our story at the weekend effectively exposed NHS England's failure to act on this evidence of a problem. And as one of our sources told us, we've lost a whole school year here in action. And that's children that we just seem to be forgetting about.
Well, come on to who did the hiding of the information or the suppressing of the information in a moment. But what you said there about the, you know, the brain and hearing, and it's, you know, the brain's relationship to sound. And anyone who's seen those cute videos on Instagram of a little baby or a toddler with the help of a hearing aid, hearing their mum or dad's voice for the first time, for example, what always strikes me, apart from them making me cry, what always strikes me about those videos is how clearly sophisticated the relationship, just the inherent relationship, is between the emotional and intellectual life of the child and the input of sound. And it's, I was thinking about it having read your piece, because it's almost mysterious, isn't it? You see this child suddenly go, oh, that's mummy's voice, and they recognize that it's not just a sound like any other sound in the room, it's mummy's voice, and they recognize, you know, the emotional connection is there. So that gives us a sense, a sort of illustration of how layered that relationship is and how any interruption to it is a really big thing for a child as they're developing.
Yeah, definitely. And we've spoken to families who've been affected by this, whose children have not been diagnosed, you know, and who are struggling. They're falling behind. One family that we spoke to, Amy Denman, her daughter Scarlett is 9 years old, and her parents are having to pay for tuition to try and catch her up, because she's now got the hearing aids that she needs. But for a long time, she didn't. And in our story in the Sunday Times, we wrote about how they first sort of spotted the problem when they went to watch her at a school sports day, and they sort of saw her standing isolated, staring at the sky or the grass, not doing what the teachers were saying, and away from all of her classmates on her own. And I think it's a heartbreaking scene, if you can imagine it, that this child has been isolated, you know, through failures in healthcare. And we know that Scarlett failed her newborn hearing test, but her parents didn't know that at the time. They weren't informed. So it really does have a big impact on children, this.
I can see calls coming in from parents whose children, or parents were told that their child was autistic, for example, or had learning difficulty of some sort, when in fact they had hearing impairment. Did that come through a lot in your investigations as well?
Yes, absolutely. That is a real concern. So we spoke to some audiologists who outlined to me, and in fact there is a case study that we featured, Tommy Denman, who's Scarlett's cousin, actually, and they both have been failed by hearing services. And what alarmingly, when the hearing service says the child has no problem, the teachers who are dealing with their frustrations and their outbursts and their emotions that naturally, you know, come out in the school day, they will turn to parents and say, well, something else is going on. And we know that there are children who will be effectively diagnosed as being learning disabled. They may be put into special schools. And again, you know, it can't be emphasized enough. All they really need is a hearing aid and a proper diagnostic test. I think that's just appalling that we've done this to some children.
You mentioned in your piece that Wes Streeting only found out about this last week. What's happening as a result of that? And what was going on in NHS England that they knew this and didn't reveal it properly? Not least in the form of recalls of children.
Yeah, so I think that's... Well, exactly. So I think that's the heart of our story, really. So we know that NHS England knew that there were problems back in 2023. They've brought together expert audiologists to look at the system, to analyse effectively all the data from NHS audiology units. And that's where we've come up with these figures, where the estimate is of the concerns. Now, the question is, what happened then? And I think the reason our whistleblowers have contacted us and shared documents with us is because they feel there just hasn't been enough action. So NHS England was aware of the scale of this by the start of this year, for sure. And there has been no communication centrally from NHS England until last week, which followed the Sunday Times asking NHS England questions about this. And that was when Wes Streeting was briefed on the 20th of September. So, you know, there's been a long time when NHS England should have done something. And we know that some of the experts they brought in wanted this treated as a national incident, but were told that, no, that it didn't meet the criteria for that and it wasn't going to.
And what would that mean?
The decision means that, in effect...
The
suggestion to me is that if you declared a national incident, well, first of all, it gets on the radar of the Secretary of State, the Department for Health. It becomes a serious issue. It unlocks some investment, potentially, some funding. So one of the problems that this story has exposed is that audiology services have been massively scaled back in terms of their funding, their training, their investment. And so to actually do these recalls and go through these, you know, thousands of children potentially will cost time and money. And I think there's been a bit of a stalemate, if you like, between local NHS areas who've requested funding to do this and NHS England who says, actually, it's your responsibility. And I think what we're getting in the middle of here is that kind of delayed action. And as one of our sources said, NHS England has forgotten the children here. This is what we're talking about. And the delays in action mean that the children won't be diagnosed.
Yeah, that's the most important thing. But there's also something else they've forgotten. Three little words, big in the NHS, we're told. Duty of candour.
Well, indeed. So some families have had duty of candour letters and phone calls, but only about a dozen areas around the country have actually started doing recalls. So if you think there are concerns at 90, where is this wide-scale recall? We need to be getting hold of these children, finding out the ones we've missed. Exactly. Getting them the hearing aids, ultimately, so they can develop properly and contribute to society. And I think, you know, Wes Streeting gave us a very strong comment on this story. He described it as an appalling situation.
Sean, I'm going to leave it there because we've got lots of calls coming in. But thank you so much for speaking to me today. Sean Linton, health editor at the Sunday Times, who broke that story over the weekend. Abby, directly affected by this. Abby's in Cheam. Hello, Abby.
Hiya, how are you?
I'm fine, thanks. Yeah, what happened to your in your situation? It was your daughter, was it? Yeah.
Yeah, so she was... I've got two children, and she's got an older sister. And when I first raised it with the GP when she turned two, I said, I'm really worried. She's not making any attempts to speak. She's not babbling or doing anything like that. And I was just told that's normal because she's got an older sister. And I was like, this doesn't feel normal. So I then went back, actually had a face-to-face with the GP. And when I took her in then, she said, well, I can see from our records that she passed her hearing test at birth. So she's probably just autistic. And it turned I had to then keep pushing. I ended up having to go to three different hearing tests for her. But she couldn't hear what they were asking her to do. She couldn't hear any of the information or the instructions. And it wasn't until I then took her to a private ENT specialist, which took us about 8 months to get to that point, that he said she's got double glue ear. When he operated and just put grommets in, you know, simple operation.
Yes, yeah, lots of kids have that, don't they? Yeah.
Exactly. He said it was the worst he'd ever seen. You know, I mean, he must have done thousands. And he said she had total hearing loss. And she's, you know, she's still struggling with it. You know, we've tried to do speech and language, but it's very hard to find someone privately to do that. But she's luckily got an EHCP, so education healthcare plan, which means she gets a small amount of speech and language therapy every other week at school, and she gets a little bit of speech and language therapy every day from a trained, in inverted commas, teacher.
Was the worst you'd ever seen that you subsequently got help from, how is it missed?
Well, I mean, the doctor, the GP, looked in her ear, and I said, I explained what she was doing, and, you know, in hindsight, I can remember a big firecracker thing going off at home, and at the time, I was like, oh my God, she's hard as nails.
She didn't flinch.
And obviously, you know, you look back and you go, oh. Yeah. But, you know, that's all they did. They looked in her ears, and they said, because she could hear at birth, she could therefore still hear now, and she just must be autistic. And basically that was where the GP first appointment face-to-face ended.
And how long has the lag been, would you say, Abby, in time, missed opportunity time?
I'd say she probably was without hearing for 2 years.
Gosh.
And, you know, she played on her own. We were very much facilitators for things that she needed reaching or getting.
But rather than her saying... hearing you say stuff to her, yeah.
So, you know, any nursery rhymes or singing, dancing, you know, she didn't have any of that. She can, as I say, we had a hearing test about 2 weeks ago. She's now got full hearing. You know, she's desperate to try and interact with other children around her, but she's kind of still in that phase of, you know, the terrible twos, where she gets really frustrated when people can't understand what she's saying, because she speaks like a deaf person, in as much as she often misses the beginning or the end
of a word. She hasn't finessed sound and diction because of her lack of hearing. Yeah. And exactly. Is she enjoying hearing?
Oh, yeah. I mean, now she loves making noises. She loves music and dancing. She loves all of the Julia Donaldson stories. And she's got a fantastic recall, so she can run her finger along the words and say all the words.
Oh, that's
fantastic.
She can't
understand all of them. But, you know, she's lovely.
Of course she's lovely. No, I just think if she's enjoying hearing and not being alarmed by it, then you're halfway there, really, aren't you? It sounds like you're doing everything you need to do. But classic example of what Sean was describing. Thank you, Abby. I wish her well and you well. Abby in Cheam, it's 3:18.
This is LBC.
The plant near the reception desk at Axel's Autocare is loving life. Because since Axel started taking card payments with Barclaycard, he's got the money in his account the next day, with no hidden fees. So he spends less time waiting and more time watering. What's good for small business is good for everyone. Barclaycard Payments.
Settlement terms may vary. To receive next day settlement, transactions need to be taken before 9 p.m. for Flex and before 7 p.m. for Smart Pay Anywhere and Smart Pay Touch. T's and C's apply.
As a nation, we're a generous lot. You could say giving is in our blood. And right now, we need all of you Giving Taps to give blood and help provide life-saving treatments. Blood is amazing. It can help combat cancer, ease emergencies, help fight sickle cell, and create life-saving medicines. So, please book an appointment and give blood now. We have lots of appointments available at convenient times, and our donor centers are based in the heart of cities. It takes an hour to save up to 3 lives. If you're the Giving Type, please book an appointment at blood.co.uk today.
It's 2024. We can use robots to clean our flats, order Kung Pao chicken with our watches, and, hey, play my tune.
Playing your playlist.
And now there's a better way to do energy. With OVO's energy savings account, Beyond, you could save cash today and bank greener rewards for tomorrow. Now that's a first. Search OVO Beyond. Discounts include bill savings by using energy at greener times. Smart meter required. For terms and eligibility, search OVO Beyond.
Sheila Fogarty on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
I'm really pleased but also sad that so many people have called on this. I wondered if, once I'd spoken to Sean, there would be people listening who were directly affected by this, and there clearly are. So I'm sorry that you have been, but your experiences are incredibly important to hear, and I hope it is given that national incident status and you get the help that you need as quickly as possible. Holly has called from Nottingham. Hello, Holly.
Hello, hi there. How are you?
I'm okay, yes, thank you.
I hope you can hear me through the rain, because it's splashing it down here.
I can hear you. I can hear the rain, though, yeah, as well.
Yeah, I heard you talking about this topic and really wanted to ring in, because we've just been through such a ringer with it for the last few years of our lives, I feel, with my son, who's 4.5, and his hearing issues were... We found out about them through our nursery, who referred us to for a hearing test when he was about 2.5, or maybe more like 2, because his behaviour wasn't quite right, and they sensed something. But we thought nothing of it, you know, as we thought, oh, he'll be fine. And we went for a hearing test, and he had really bad hearing, which was a complete shock to us, because we just had completely missed it, and we felt quite guilty about that. And since that point, his hearing was... We were having constant hearing tests, and it got a little bit better, but hearing aids weren't going to work, because my understanding is if it gets slightly better, you can't have a hearing aid, because it blocks out the partially good hearing. But he's been having these hearing tests now since he was 2. We've had 10 hearing tests. We've had 2 privately and 8 on the NHS. It took us 1.5 years to be seen by ENT. And we finally got the news that he will get grommets, but we are on the list. And I know at the minute they told me last week they've got 90 children waiting for grommets on the list.
It's not a major procedure, is it, grommets, when they're inserted?
I think we knew nothing about glue ear when we had our first child. And, you know, he's had other issues with ear infections, etc. My understanding is that it's a 45-minute procedure. Yeah. It's a, you know, in-and-out kind of job. But, you know, my understanding as well from the beginning is that every single service, you know, the care they're providing when you're in the hearing, appointment, or you're having a meeting with a consultant is great, but they are so backlogged. There is such a big queue. Mm. And these poor kids, you know, my son, I always described them as round. You know, he couldn't really, his phonics were all off, and it was so disappointing because he started school in September, and they've picked up on it already, and he's been put in a group, which is, the school are fantastic, and they've been brilliant, kind of bringing him in.
And they know your story of everything, yeah.
Yeah, they know the story. I mean, I don't think his behaviour is great, but he's, you know, a bonkers 4.5-year-old, and so I don't put it all down to the hearing, but no. It's a piece of the pie, I think.
Of course it is, yeah.
I'm really
surprised at the 90 waiting list. That's just one unit, is it, that list?
90.
Because
I won't say the hospital, but it's a big hospital, and there's 90. The guy said, look, I don't know when you're going to get seen. I said, do you think a month? Do you think 6 months? And he said, there's 90 children in the queue waiting to go. And I just think that's a lot of young children to be waiting for good hearing, because I always said to them, if it was your child
in one hospital,
you'd have
multiply
glasses.
That by however many,
however many there are across the country. But as a mother, you just want perfect hearing, you want perfect eyesight, you know.
You wouldn't leave your child not seeing, would you?
No, exactly. And I just think they've fallen so far behind.
Gosh.
That, you know, so when I hear the story on the radio, I was like, I've got to pull over. I've got to talk to
you. Well, I'm glad you did, because I think it's a really, well, it was literally a hidden story. It was being hidden by NHS England, which is disgraceful.
And lots of children, I think, have had grommets. I just think, I don't know whether, I hate to go back to the whole COVID thing, but there was, maybe things are still backed up from then. I'm not really sure.
Maybe.
And the lady earlier said about speech therapy, and that was so difficult to get. Couldn't get any speech therapy. I think it was about £700 for a course. And we also looked at grommets privately, because I know some people would turn to that. But I think it was £5,500 to do. And I think they can sometimes fall out. So we were just really hesitant, and we just kept thinking and hoping that the NHS would be there and come through
for us. And for people who don't know what they are, they're like a little ventilation tube, aren't they, inside the eardrum?
Yeah, and it prevents goes in the middle compartment of the ear.
Mm. Which is where the buildup of fluid starts.
Exactly, yeah. So we just wait and see now.
Well, I hope the fact that Sean has broken this story, and that the health secretary now knows about it, that there is some kind of speeding up of the system for you, because it's funding that's needed, isn't it? And you know, maybe they're not telling you the full truth when they talk about the waiting list. Maybe what it is they haven't got the money to do it. They haven't got the money to pay the people who would be doing it. In the numbers of people affected, you certainly aren't the only one, are you? If it's 90 in that one hospital unit. Thanks, Holly. You know, we wouldn't leave kids without sight, would we, once we'd established they needed specs? Well, I hope we wouldn't. Tasneem has called from Croydon. Hello, Tasneem.
Hi, it's Sheila. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. Yeah, you're going back a long way, but a similar story, yeah?
Yes, I'm going back 27 years. I have a daughter, Insia, who exactly had the same story, that she couldn't speak. I used to worry about why is she not babbling or not talking. Went to the doctors quite a few times, but nothing happened. And then when I put her in the school, and the teacher, nursery teacher, told me that I think your daughter is deaf. And she said that you really need to go and take a test over there. And we went. And yes, she was deaf. She had blue ears, exactly same thing. I had to go private. There's two surgeries, put the grommets in, take them out. But now my daughter is 27. And yes, wears digital hearing aids in both ears. But she could lip read. You see, that's why I never thought that she could not hear. It was just me and her in the house. We used to get away with things.
She got around it, yeah.
Yes, yeah. And when I put her in the classroom of 30, that's when everything started making sense, that she was scared of the noises and everything.
And what did she need in the long run?
She wears digital hearing aids in both ears.
Right, and it's all good.
Yeah, it's all good. But she's development, there is a delay.
Mm.
But she's got by. She's got diploma in health and social care.
Oh,
she works.
Right.
Sometimes she gets, and sometimes she doesn't. It's part of her. They say that's part of her, like hearing loss and everything, growing up delays. Sometimes she understands, sometimes she doesn't.
Well, it's such a, I mean, if you just look at when you talk to a baby or a toddler, you know, when you're educating a kid, you know, it's a lot of it is speech, isn't it? Explaining things, singing songs, doing poems, learning to read, whatever it is, just going out for a walk and talking about what you're seeing. It's all about speech and hearing, isn't it? At that stage, you know, you're not giving them, I hope we're not giving them tests at the age of four these days, are we? As in school tests. It's about just education through observation and talking and things, isn't it? Sham is called from Epsom. Hello, Sham.
Oh, hi, Sheila. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. Just let me say thank you to Tasneem. Thank you, Tasneem. Apologies, Sham.
Okay.
You want to go back to when you were a kid?
I mean, I'm 64 now, and all my life, okay, I'd been accused of not paying attention, not listening, and what have you, yeah. And I do remember, like, that I did have, like, massive earaches when I was a child. I was brought up in care. I did overhear the doctor once saying, I think he's just the one for an earache sort of thing, you know, and what have you. But that, beside all that, like, but kids today, they really do need the attention, okay? So much depends on hearing, okay? I didn't get diagnosed with my profound hearing loss until I was like about 61. Okay, the attitude of my doctor when I went there to sort of say, you know, he said, well, perhaps you're just going deaf. And I actually said to him that, well, you're a professional. I'd like to know exactly why, you know. Mm. But over the years, it had a profound effect. I cut off relationships over, you know, being accused of talking over people, being arrogant, and just not paying attention. And it wasn't until my son, who finally grew up, and he turned to me and he'd done some tests for me, i.e. talking behind my back. And okay. I hadn't heard him. He said, you can't talk, you can't hear me. And that, and he basically, he forced me to go to have some proper tests. And I had to fight for that.
And what was it in the end?
Sorry?
What was it? Did you need a hearing aid or?
I've got two hearing aids now, and I'm hearing sounds that I've never heard before. You know, the day that they actually fitted the hearing aids, I was staring at the wall because I could hear these sounds, and the lady said to me, you can hear trolleys going up and down, can't you? And I said, yeah, I think I can. It was just an amazing thing. But the children, so many children these days are being accused and prejudged over their behaviour and their skills,
yeah,
as a result of, you know, and people do really need to ask the basic questions.
And pay close attention to what the real problem is, for sure, and certainly not hide it when you find out you've misdiagnosed lots of children, which is what seems to have happened here. Thank you very much, Sham, for your call. Sham in Epsom. More of your calls in a few minutes, and we'll also hear from Natasha Clark, LBC's political editor, who's at the Conservative Party conference this week. It's 3:31. Let's get some headlines from Jenny Barsby.
The government says it's doing everything it can to secure seats on commercial flights for Britons trying to flee Lebanon. This comes as fears grow that Israel's about to launch a ground invasion against Hezbollah. Four police officers and a member of staff are to face disciplinary proceedings over the David Carrick case. The watchdog's been looking into how the Metropolitan Police dealt with four allegations against the serial rapist while he was a serving officer. And a 96-year-old woman who killed a 76-year-old when her car mounted the pavement on Merseyside has been given a suspended sentence. June Mills was found guilty of causing the death by dangerous driving of Brenda Joyce in August last year. LBC weather staying wet and windy in the east overnight, brighter elsewhere, lows of 10 degrees.
This is LBC.
The British Airways end of summer sale has landed. Just as you're about to return to the chaos of weekday mornings. First gear for miles down the motorway. Piles of paperwork, quick or nothing dinners, commutes with no personal space. You deserve another break. Find thousands of flights and holidays in the British Airways end of summer sale. Subject to availability, sale ends 1st of October. Holidays are at all protected. Terms and conditions apply. Visit ba.com/sale.
When you run a small business, a handshake means a lot. They can be a greeting, an agreement, or a nice to see you. And whether they last too long or not long enough, they mean you're meeting with a Bob, not a bot. Some might be bone-crushing, others might be soft. However the handshake, at Metro Bank, we're always pleased to meet with you. Pop in and meet your local business manager. Metro Bank. Business to business. Face to face. Metro Bank is authorised and regulated by the FCA and PRA.
That was the bomb that still makes Kent jump. That keeps him awake at night. That he can't stop thinking about. That scares his wife. Upsets his kids. That ruined his life. The bomb exploded in Iraq 20 years ago. For many, the battle continues. Combat Stress provides intensive mental health treatment to UK veterans with complex mental health problems. Combat Stress. For veterans' mental health. To find out more, go to combatstress.org.uk.
Curtains drawn at dawn. You wake, and so does your potential. You don't let it snooze or sit around. You act on it. Run with it. Past the safety of routine and familiarity to somewhere new. Because anything is possible if you choose to make it happen.
Whether you're growing your business, switching careers, or just starting out, make the most of your potential. It all starts with skills. Search Skills for Life.
Need to print?
Take a hint. You can get toner and ink
for less than you'd think
from cartridgepeople.com.
For unbeatable prices.
Cartridge People.
Printing.
Sorted.
See online for our price promise.
Sheila Fogarty on LBC. Listen on your smart speaker. Just say, play LBC.
The Conservative Party conference is happening. I think that's all I need to say. Natasha Clark, LBC's political editor, is here. That's the shortest cue of my life.
It sums it right up, Sheila. It sums up your thoughts about the Conservative Party conference too, I fear.
Yes, perhaps. Was it obvious in my tone? Not that I'm bored by it, but I think there's a sense that it's not really a party conference, is it? It's a kind of hustings for the candidates.
It's a really weird atmosphere here in Birmingham today. Like you said, because we've got four of these candidates, and actually I was just speaking to some Tory members doing some vox popping, trying to find out who they might all be voting for. I spoke to one very frustrated member who summed it up really nicely for me, just saying, I think this is a total waste of time. I just think we've taken far too long to be thinking about our defeat and to be thinking about who we want the next leader to be. We've been talking about this all summer and we still don't have a new leader, and they think it's a completely pointless process having all these members to try and get all this airtime with the four leadership hopefuls without actually picking one of them. And it just feels very much here like a party that's very much in limbo. They don't exactly know which direction they're going to take. There's not a lot of businesses here. I was speaking to one MP who said that he's been at the business reception. Obviously there are people that want them to make their case for them ahead of the budget and obviously after the budget in terms of their business asks, but there's not a lot of businesses here. There's not a lot of members here. There's not a lot of people here generally, really. It's obviously not the kind of place which, you know, where the hustle and bustle of government is happening. It's the aftermath of a party who've just suffered one of their worst defeats in modern history and are very much licking their wounds and trying to get back on track. And to be honest with you, Sheila, there is a little bit of an air of optimism and slightly delusion in the air here. Some of these members that I'm speaking to are incredibly confident that they can turn the party around. Everybody I'm asking, pretty much everybody, is saying they still think the Conservatives have a chance of winning the next general election. And firstly, I'd say, well, you know, that's 5 years' time. I would never be making a confident prediction about that. Secondly, of course, maybe they would say that. They're Conservatives, they're Conservative members, and they want to feel optimistic about the future and vision of their party. But it just feels like a party that's not really quite accepted the scale of their defeat, the scale of the anger out there of the Conservative Party, and they haven't quite accepted that there are so many people in the wider world that just don't really want to be hearing from them this week about what they have to say.
I mean, it's legitimate, as you say, it's perfectly legitimate to hold faith, you know, to keep the faith in your party or in whatever you're talking about in life. It's legitimate, of course, to keep the faith. But when you've had such a kicking as they have, there's a fair bit of stuff to do before you talk about the sunlit. Well, they're good at talking about sunlit uplands, aren't they?
Exactly.
A bit sooner than doing the actual work. Yeah.
Listening is what the Conservative Party need to be doing right now. They need to be going out there and talking to the country. And obviously, this is about the members completely. And, you know, to be fair, the leadership candidates have been out and about this summer, talking both to members, but also to members of the public about what went wrong, why people didn't feel that they could support them in the election. And, of course, they have come back with some answers. It's going to take a little while to really figure the depth and the scale of the anger that really many people felt after 14 years of government. But the idea that the Conservative Party can turn it around in 5 years feels to me even quite a huge, bold claim to make. And I know that, you know, I always say to people, we're in an incredibly volatile period with the electorate right now. We swung from a Boris Johnson 80-seat majority to a Keir Starmer absolutely stonking 180-seat majority. Anything can happen. But the Conservatives really, like I say, it just feels a bit like they're rudderless at the moment. They just don't know which way they're going to turn. And like I say, I've just been speaking to Tory members and I've been vox popping them, asking them who they're going to vote for. I've got a range of views. I've got a range of people voting for every candidate. I was surprised, actually, the level of support for Tom Tugendhat, who generally is seen as one of the sort of underdogs in the contest. He's one of the more moderates, and people don't expect him to get through to the final two. There's also a bit of a talk behind the scenes about a possible deal that could be done between Tom Tugendhat and James Cleverly, which may see James Cleverly get into the final two. That would obviously see Kemi Badenoch not get into the final two. If that happens, a James Cleverly contest versus Robert Jenrick, that would be a really, really interesting battle. But it has been fascinating to talk to Tory members here about what they think went wrong, whether they think they can, there's a way back for them, and what that might look like, because everybody has a very, very different answer about what that's going to look like. And, you know, if you're an MP, if you're a business person, you don't really know who's going to be leading the Conservative Party and which direction it's going to be going in. So in a way, this conference feels so irrelevant, so pointless to so many people. But I was struck generally by talking to people how optimistic they are that they can get on and rebuild, and they do feel that the Labour government is giving them them a lot of grounds to kick the government with, a few cracks starting to appear in Keir Starmer's government, and giving them a little bit of hope that they can turn things around.
Let's talk briefly about Rishi Sunak's decision not to give a kind of parting speech as such. He spoke yesterday, but he's not going to give that set piece party leader speech. Again, I kind of get why he's made that decision, given that they are focusing on who the next leader might be. But you could also argue that a moment from him wouldn't go amiss, almost rallying the troops to that cause of revival.
Yes, and I think he did have a little bit of that yesterday. I was there in this sort of, it was a weird, it's inside Symphony Hall inside central Birmingham and in the ICC, which has got a huge organ in the back, and we were all sort of maybe hoping that he might get out and play it or something. It was very dark in there and sort of lots of lights and cameras and I sort of felt a little bit more like a club rather than a sort of leaving speech for Rishi Sunak, which yes. was quite an odd tone. He spoke with an air of being quite relieved that he was leaving, obviously a tinge of sadness, and I think disappointment that he'd obviously led the party to such a disastrous victory. Of course, you can't really shrug that kind of thing off. I think he did sort of try and say, look, this is not about me anymore. I've done my absolute best. I want to try and pass it on to these guys now. It's not about me anymore. It's time for the future. We're going to look to them. It would have felt a bit odd, I think, to have Rishi Sunak give a proper leader's speech. However, what we are hearing here today in Birmingham, there's a bit of momentum gathering behind an idea to shorten this leadership contest, and so many people are already saying this is too long. We want a leader in place before the budget so we can properly respond to Keir Starmer. Tom Tugendhat is this afternoon got behind that idea to shorten the leadership contest,
how would
to
they
cut
do
it
that?
Down by a few weeks.
Oh, just the time scale of it, not the process itself.
Sorry, yes, just by cutting it down. So obviously we are at four leadership candidates now. We're going to go down to two in a couple of weeks' time, and then it's going to go to the members. We still aren't going to have another leader until the 2nd of November. A lot of people here are really frustrated that they think they're wasting a lot of time, because whoever is going to be leader is going to have a shadow cabinet reshuffle. All of these people that are in these top positions at the moment, Sheila, are not going to be here for very long, and they're going to want to take the party in the direction that they see fit. So a lot of people really hoping that they could cut that down. Tom Tugendhat and Robert Jenrett, now two leadership contenders, saying yes, I would like to see that timetable sped up so we can get a new leader in place. I don't think that's at the moment, I'm not picking up any sort of idea that actually might happen, but I think it gives you a sense of the frustration amongst some members that things are sort of not moving quite as quickly as they hope.
And given that the final two will do what Liz Truss and Rishi Sunak did and go to the membership, I'm presuming that membership hasn't materially changed since the last time. Go on.
I was going to say, what we do know about the Conservative membership at the moment, there's not a lot. We know there's around 140,000 members, which is a little bit less than we knew a couple of years ago. We do know that you've been able to join as a Conservative member at the very, very start of the contest. So if you paid your membership fees, you could sign up to vote for the next leader. We don't know a lot about whether there have been a lot of people that have signed up to have their say. We do know that traditionally they tend to be older, they tend to be more right-wing, so that would favour people like Kemi Badenoch, like Robert Jenrick. However, I've been really struck and quite interested in the support for both Tom Tugendhat and James Cleverly. Speaking to a lot of people here, it's very clear it is quite an open race. I don't think it's quite as clear cut as everybody is saying it is out to be. I think generally this race feels quite wide open at the moment. We don't know a lot about the Tory membership and exactly which way they vote. We generally think they will vote more right wing, but actually I think there are a lot of young members here, and I was sort of when I was voxing people, I was quite struck by the number of young people I was seeing here at Conservative Conference. I think there is a next generation of the party coming through, and that will probably be focusing the party in probably a slightly different way. However, some of them I spoke to were absolutely getting behind Kemi Badenoch. So, I don't think it's fair to say just because they're younger people, they will be on the left of the party. I think they're all pretty much a spread. Yes, will we be seeing a bit of a lurch to the right to tackle that threat from Reform? There have been people I've been speaking to here. We're speaking to Stuart Anderson, the opposition chief whip, earlier today, and he was saying, look, it's not just about Reform, it's about tacking self to both the right and the left. You know, the Liberal Democrats took loads of chunk out of our votes. Kemi Badenoch's just been on the main stage. I've just been watching her in the overflow hall, because she's clearly quite popular. She's filled up the main hall, so there's had to be a separate side room. Even she was saying, look, people just voted anything but Conservative at the last election. They voted Green, they voted Liberal Democrat, they voted Reform. They've got to really
Labour.
Address
clearly.
Exactly, the And of course they voted Labour, and we have a Labour government now, of course we do. And she was saying, look, we've got to win votes back from all of those people. It cannot just be about reform. And I think that seems to be the main message that I'm picking up from those members here, that they want to see a candidate that is strong, that's ambitious, that can take on both the left and the right.
Do you think that in fairly short order, whoever is chosen, the party will look at its leadership election process? I was hearing one Conservative MP last night saying that he felt it should be the reverse of what it currently is, that, the membership should deliver the two candidates, and then MPs who will be working alongside them in parliamentary party should make that final decision, where now it's the other way around, isn't it?
I think it is, of course, right that the Conservatives have a vote for both members and a vote for MPs. They're both influential within the party structure. I don't sense any sort of changing the rules around that at the moment going to happen. What I am hearing, though, is obviously, look, whenever there's a new leader, they tend to do things a bit differently. They tend to have their own shake-up. Somebody was raising concern to me about the level of threshold about forcing out the leader. We know the Conservatives are really good at forcing out their leader. They've done so many times over the last couple of years. But the fact that the Conservative Party is so much smaller than it is, than it has been at any point, you've only got 121 MPs. If you're going to launch a leadership challenge, I think you need 15% of the Conservative Party to do so. That's obviously a very different threshold now than it once was. And it could mean that the bar could get changed. And that's one thing that I know that some leadership contenders are actively looking at, whether they need to change that threshold to mean that they are a bit safer in their jobs. Obviously, you know, we know that Conservative Party need that sort of reassurance that they can kick out somebody they don't like, but obviously with a different parliamentary arithmetic, that's all going to change. But yes, there is this debate about how much say the members should get, and obviously they haven't got any say at the moment. But you know, they did pick Liz Truss. Look what happened to her. And there's a lot of sort of playing competing interests, I think, in this one.
Thank you very much indeed, Natasha. Good to have you on the programme as ever, Natasha Clark, LBC's political editor. It's 3:45.
Coming up at 4 on LBC, Tom Swarbrick.
Are some cultures inherently better than others? Kemi Badenoch suggests so. Do you agree?
Tom Swarbrick on LBC.
Aunt Mabel's train's been cancelled.
I'll go and get her.
Rob, don't be silly. It's miles away. And last time she called you Ron. She's not exactly your biggest fan.
It's okay. She won't mind the long route back, right? I'll show her the sights.
He still got his pyjamas on. Be the master of fun in the new all-electric Mini Cooper. Iconic go-kart wheels, standout design, and now with 1 year free car insurance. Book your 24-hour test drive today. Insurance offer valid on electric Mini Coopers ordered by 2nd of January 2025. T's and C's exclusions and eligibility apply. Test drive subject to states and availability. Does your printer need ink?
In a hurry?
Just think.
CartridgePeople.com.
For unbeatable prices, Cartridge People.
Printing.
Sorted. See online for our price promise.
We've all been there. MOT's coming up. Your car's making a noise or two. And you think if you just turn your music up just a little louder each time, you'll be fine. But that's not you, is it? You know you can get your car in check with parts that will fit right. All you need to do is enter your reg on eBay. Find brake lights, filters, windscreen wipers and more, and get your car MOT ready. Find the right part at the right price with eBay.
Did you know you could get the winter fuel payment or the equivalent in Scotland if you get pension credit? Pension credit is worth, on average, £3,900 per year and gives you help with other living costs. It's for people aged 66 or over and on a low income. Check the online eligibility calculator today to see if you're entitled. Search pension credit on gov.uk or call 0800 991234. Eligibility criteria apply.
EasyJet's Big Orange Sale is now on, with up to 20% off flights. Whether it's winter sun or a weekend in the city, book now at easyjet.com. Get out there. Selected dates, book by 11 p.m. the 1st of the 10th, 24. Flights one way, T's and C's apply.
Energy threads through everything we do, from this radio show to your home or your phone, to school halls, to market stalls, to dance floors and the full-time scores, to box set binges, to takeaways, to celebrating birthdays. That's why National Grid is working to deliver the Great Grid Upgrade, the largest overhaul of the electricity grid in generations, connecting more clean, affordable wind power to you and all the things you love to do. The Great Grid Upgrade. Find out more at nationalgrid.com.
This is LBC. Message Sheila Fogarty on WhatsApp now on 0345 60 60 973.
Sean Linton, health editor of the Sunday Times, broke a really important story over the weekend that many of you have had without any of us knowing, first-hand experience of, which is that your child's hearing tests, when you've had, they have had difficulties, lots of children being misdiagnosed or not diagnosed at all, and now waiting for help, being misdiagnosed as having special educational needs, learning delay, rather than a hearing issue that could be easily rectified either with a procedure or a hearing aid. And there's evidence, strong evidence, that was in Sean's article over the weekend that NHS England essentially suppressed this information and have been busy having arguments with the local local health authorities that want to fix it and recall people and give them the proper diagnoses and proper checks again. And they've been arguing. I've said it 1,000 times about the NHS. I've seen it 1,000 times. I've said it 1,000 times. Too often, system matters more than person. So everybody, understandably, because systems matter, you know, you've got to have a system if you're going to run a health service, you've got to have a system if you're going to keep people's records and all the rest. I get it, you've got to have a system. But if the system becomes king and the person becomes secondary to the system, this is the kind of thing that happens. And then when the mistake is found, if it is then hidden, that just adds insult to injury and goes entirely against the NHS's supposed commitment to a duty of candour. When a mistake is found, tell the truth about it. You see why we need the Hillsborough Law, everybody. Samantha in Elstree, hello.
Hi. My son is now 4 years old. When he was 2, we noticed that he was starting to speak, but being our first child, we had no idea whether he was, at the right pace and the right speed and saying the right things at the right time, but we noticed that he wasn't being able to pronounce things properly like some of our other friends' children's were, and no means was behind, but there was definitely something not quite right, and this was accompanied by quite a few things that we would never put together, like constant snotty nose, not sleeping well, and we went to our GP quite a few times to raise the issue, to bring it up and say that we think something's not quite right. I don't know what that is, but something must be causing this. And we were brushed off a few times. Eventually, one of my friends went to go and see an ENT specialist. And luckily, we have private insurance, so we also went to go see them. But this was after quite a few months. And the ENT specialist referred us to a hearing test. And it turned out that he had glue it in both ears, but one of them was particularly bad. And this then resulted in him having both tonsils and adenoids out, and he said equally he was having quite a few throat problems, and we said, you know, should we be taking his tonsils out? This was to our GP, and he was saying, no, you don't need to do any of that. And the ENT specialist said, actually, this is disrupting his learning, it's disrupting his development, because one, he's not sleeping well at night, and two, he actually can't hear properly in one ear and not great in the other ear. So we went ahead and had his tonsils and adenoids out with the possibility of adding grommets if this hadn't made too much of a difference. And within, I'd say, a month to 2 months, the development was shocking. It was through the roof. He was suddenly pronouncing letters like he hadn't done it before, and it was so apparent. His sleeping, he was silent when he was sleeping, whereas before he was really loud, and he was staying in the same position for much longer. He was sleeping better.
Was he breathing like Snuffleupagus?
Yeah, it was so loud. We could hear him from our bedroom every night, really, really loud, and yeah. It was almost instant. As soon as he had this operation,
it alleviated.
Was silent. Yeah, it was to the point where I was going in to check he was breathing because it was so quiet. And the development really shocked me, because I can only imagine how many people don't get the help that they need, because it was really interesting to see how that changed.
And how long was the gap between you seeking help and getting the right diagnosis?
I think I first went to someone when he just turned 2. And I probably went once every 6 weeks to the GP, because he was getting quite unwell as well. He was getting really, really bad colds and coughs and things like that. And it was just something wasn't right. I know kids go to nursery and they get that, but I was also flagging the fact that I didn't think he was saying things, or he was ignoring us sometimes. And never picked up on that maybe it might be a hearing issue. And interestingly, when we had the hearing test, you could see what he could hear and what he couldn't.
Yeah.
So
it should have alerted everybody properly, shouldn't it?
Yeah. Well, and at that age, it can really disrupt them.
And is all well now?
Yeah, he's great now. And funnily enough, we have a younger son who I think may be following the same pattern, but I know now when he turns two, you know, we'll go and see someone and we'll start probably the same process.
Mm-hmm. But you've got the information now, haven't you? And importantly, this nonsense that's been going on in NHS England has been revealed as well, so they'll have to do something about that. Thank you, Samantha. Samantha in Elstree. Alan has called from Hillingdon. Hello, Alan.
Hello there. I just wanted to get a little tip for readers, for your listeners, rather.
Yeah?
If a child's not reacting at the age of two, a good little tip to check if they have autism or if they have problems with their hearing is to kind of make some loud noises behind them.
Yeah.
Rather like what one of your previous contributors said.
Yeah.
And that way, if the child reacts to them, you can obviously see that there's not a problem with the hearing and it might be something like autism.
Mm.
Conversely, if they don't react, it is something that could be listening issues. And obviously, I'm no expert on that side of things, but you're
a
useful tip for readers.
But you are involved in autism, is that right?
Yes.
But so your understanding is, if you, let's say for the sake of argument, if you clapped very loudly behind a child with autism, they would react. Sorry, Alan, I can't hear you.
Yes, they would react.
They would react.
And I would suggest also trying it with different things, so like glasses, because sometimes the sounds can be different for children with autism as well. To try, you know, maybe cleaning two glasses together or two cups together.
Thank you.
But clapping is the usual method.
Yeah, OK. Your line is terrible, Alan. I'm so sorry. But, you know, I'm sure people can try that one, can't they, quite easily before they go and see a health professional. But do go and see a health professional and push. Des is called from Beckenham. Hello, Des.
Hi, Sheila. I've lived all my life with glue ear. It normally clears up when you're a child, but I was forced to ring when I heard about the waiting list, over 90 children.
Yeah.
With my situation, obviously, every time my hearing went, that was time to have a new grommet put in, and obviously through my life I'd had many. So I used to almost have the ENT on speed dial and say, right, it's time for a new one. But to cut the waiting list, I used to opt for non-anaesthetic. So they just put a tiny drop of whatever the anaesthetic is on the eardrum. Yes, that's painful instantaneously, but it got me in very, very quickly. So I know it's going to be difficult for the parents with the children because they have to manage the pain, but anything that would reduce them waiting, because it is a horrible thing to live with. So I just wanted to say, you know, if that's something that would help them, please consider it.
And is it an uncomfortable procedure?
No. Once that tiny drop is on your eardrum, that's the most uncomfortable part of it. Other than that, it's brilliant because you go in, you have a little cloth put over your side of your face, ears exposed, they pop the grommet in and bang, the world is there again. It's instantaneous.
Yes. And you reckon a child could cope without the
anaesthetic? It's difficult. It's very difficult, I'm not going to lie. But
you're a tough old thing from Beckenham.
bear in mind that the parent is probably feeling it more than the child may be.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think the child would maybe appreciate it when they realised just, you know, what a difference it would make. But
yes.
It was just the waiting list that made me call in, really. Obviously, my time, thankfully, I never had to have that issue.
Yeah. I went deaf for 2 days on holiday once, only because I got water behind some bit of my ear where it shouldn't have been or something. Mm-hmm. And it's the weirdest sensation to just, as you've experienced, just to suddenly lose your hearing again.
It's very isolating. It's a horrible condition, yeah.
It's like being underwater, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, it's... it can be, at its worst, it gets very depressing because you become inward. And people don't realise, you know, even today, I've got mates who sort of like don't fully understand it, take the mickey, but as somebody who sort of suffers from it, is.
It's isolating. Yeah, I can imagine. Thank you very much, Des, for your call, Des, in Beckenham. We'll return to this story and keep a close eye on exactly what NHS England and West Streeting intend to do about it, because that's a lot of harm, actually, is what it is, being done to children. If you missed any of today's show, you can listen back on Catch Up on Global Player, where you'll also find all of LBC shows, as well as the world's biggest podcasts. Don't tell Kemi Badenoch. Download Global Player for free from your app store or head to globalplayer.com. Coming up at 6 on LBC, it's Andrew Marr, but now Tom Swarbrick.
Sheila, thank you very much indeed. Afternoon all, welcome to the show at 4 o'clock.
There is nowhere in the Middle East Israel cannot reach. There's nowhere we will not go to protect our people.
Israeli special forces have been on the ground in southern Lebanon for months. Reports from the US suggest Hezbollah say they are ready for any ground invasion. Details throughout the show will speak to the IDF. Meanwhile,
coal has been the backbone of power generation in the UK for nearly a century, but its place is now in the history books.
Coalatio, a huge goal reached as the UK becomes the first major economy to end the burning of coal to generate electricity. All that needs to happen now is to build thousands of new pylons, Starmer says. And,
of course, not all cultures are equally valid. I believe in Western values.
Tory leadership hopeful Kemi Badenoch says not all cultures are equally valid. Is that a particularly controversial thing to say? Why wouldn't we in Britain agree that cultures that permit the stoning of gay people, for example, are less enlightened than our own?
On your radio, on Global Player, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 4 o'clock, British nationals are again being told to get out of Lebanon while commercial airlines are still flying in and out of the country. It's as fears grow that Israel's about to launch a ground invasion against Hezbollah. Lieutenant Colonel Jonathan Conricus is a former spokesperson for the Israeli Defence Forces. He told LBC what their endgame is.
What Israel is trying to achieve here is to allow its 70,000 civilians to go back to their homes without being targeted by either Hezbollah anti-tank missiles being fired directly at their homes, or having the specter of Hezbollah having the ability to cross into Israel at will.
Four police officers and a staff member are to face disciplinary proceedings over the David Carrick case. The watchdog's been looking into how the Metropolitan Police dealt with four allegations against a serial rapist while he was a serving officer. He was eventually arrested in October 2021 and jailed last February. A 21-year-old man has been arrested after a suspected drive-by shooting in Wolverhampton. Three women were injured as they walked along Frederick Street on Friday night. Two are still in hospital. The man was arrested on suspicion of attempted murder last night. Liz Truss has told the Tory party conference the Conservatives would have fared better at the general election if she'd still been leader.
If the mini-budget had been allowed to succeed, you know, we'd have lower corporation tax, bringing more companies into this country, not relocating to Ireland. We'd have duty-free shoppers coming to London rather than being diverted to Paris or Milan.
She was Britain's shortest